Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Davis, Minister of the Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount South Charles Island, Liberty, Kentucky. Today is August 5th, 2016, our CD is 3, 2020, we will start. Our first service today with a song entitled, When the Road is Called Up Yonder. When the trumpet goes, the yell shall sound, and time shall be no more. And the morning breaks eternal, bright and fair. When the saved of earth shall gather over on the other shore, and the road is called up yonder, I'll be there. When the road is called up yonder, 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 I'll be there. On that bright and cloudless morning, when the dead in Yahshua shall rise, and the glory of this resurrection shine, when his chosen ones shall gather all their homes beyond the sky, and the road is called up yonder, I'll be there. When the road is called up yonder, 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 I'll be there. Let us lay before the Master from the daunting setting sun. Let us talk of all his wondrous love and care. And when all of life is over and our work on earth is done, then the road is called up yonder, I'll be there. When the road is called up yonder, 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 I'll be there.
Everlasting Kingdom, Part 16. We're in our track, Brother Stedney Johnson's track called Kingdom Jubilee, 1998. And you know what? Inspired or uninspired, all the writings of your Yahweh's people, the prophets, whether they're called prophets or servants or whatever, even though they end up giving a false prophecy, Yahweh still really like he didn't give one King Saul. As far as allowing him to go ahead and carry out his 40-year period. Yeah, he gave up on him all right. He moved on to someone else, and he withdrew his spirit from King Saul all right. But King Saul still fulfilled prophecy in filling out his 40 years. So every time Brother Johnson picked up his pencil to write something, it was for a reason. Even though Yahweh wasn't with him anymore. And just like Balaam, he was a true prophet in Israel. But and he uttered the most beautiful prophecy ever that you can imagine. At the same time, he's trying to curse Israel, and Yahweh disapproved of it, but nevertheless he allowed him to prophesy a most wonderful, wonderful prophecy. And I believe it's in Numbers 24:17. And I want to read that prophecy. It says, I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not now. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and destroy all the children of Sheth. And Edom shall be a possession, that translate here in the last days, the Seventh-day Adventist Church has taken on that identity, as also Mount Edom. Seir also shall be a possession for his enemies, and Israel shall do valiantly. Out of Jacob shall come he that shall have dominion. Now when it says out of Jacob, he's identifying which one of the twin brothers was going to produce this Savior of the world. And that would be Yahshua. So that would be Jacob that he chose over Esau. Esau presides over Mount Edom. Esau has a Hebrew father, Isaac. Jacob has the same father, Isaac. So when Brother Johnson talks about the Isaac branch message, he's talking about the Jacob that had the legal right to be the promoter of the Isaac branch message. Now, when I joined Brother Johnson in 1970, I represented Jacob. Brother Johnson represented Esau. I was the one that had the right to bring forth the Isaac branch message, not Brother W. Johnson. But since Brother Johnson had the first privilege because of the birthright privilege, then he was the one given the first opportunity to bring forth the Isaac branch message. But as prophecy would hold, and type would hold, and tradition would hold, and custom would hold, Brother Johnson did not fulfill that in the antitype, as his predecessor Esau and the type did not fulfill it either. All right. So it says that here is Balaam is saying here in verse 19 of Numbers 24, out of Jacob shall come he that shall have dominion, and shall destroy him that remaineth of the city. Okay, and shall destroy him that remaineth of the city. Now, this is deep, folks. This is real deep. When you come to bring this down to our day and translate this into our day, when was the city brought to an end? I'm talking about Mount Edom, the Adventist Church. 2002, according to prophecy, her time was up for having anything to do with promoting prophecy, promoting also the gospel, the everlasting gospel, the three angels' message. That's all she had, that's all she ended up with, and that's all she ever wanted. She didn't care anything about that fourth and fifth angel that is attached to those three angels there in Revelation 14 that goes with the three angels. She wasn't interested in those last two angels, which were harvest angels, were sealing and harvest angels. She wasn't interested in those. So, what remained then? It says, and shall destroy him that remaineth of the city. Brother Johnson is the last one that remained of the city. In 1970-2003, he's the last one that remained. And so it said this star that comes out of Jacob here in the last day, that comes out of the house of David, this translates down to the house of David. And it translates into the 12th parabolic hour when this happens. So, this star out of David, 12th hour, brings the 11th parabolic hour to a close by the starting the judgment of the house of Yahweh, 1 Peter 4:17, with the angel of the seventh candlestick at Gilead Center at Kermit, Texas. 2002. Out of Jacob shall he shall come he that shall have dominion, and shall destroy him, Lewis W. Johnson, that remaineth of that fallen city, SDA, Seventh-day Adventist, that is pointed out in Ezekiel 4. All right, Ezekiel 4 is a prophecy that brought the Seventh-day Adventist church to a close. Ezekiel 4. Isn't it amazing how things happen? If we can get down to Ezekiel 4, I'll read it to you. Let's see, it says that, thou also son of man. Now this is talking about the same one that is appointed by this star that comes out of Jacob here in the last days, and Yahshua is that star. He says, thou also son of man. He's talking to Ezekiel as the son of man, but Ezekiel translates into whoever's receiving, whoever has the prophecy for the bringing this to the fulfillment. Says, thou also, son of man, take thee a tile and lay it before thee and portray upon it the city, even Jerusalem. Now, what do we got here? We're connecting up again with the city. The city. Now, it told us, it didn't tell us right here in Numbers 24:19, it didn't tell us the name of that city. It just said, out of Jacob shall come he that shall have dominion and shall destroy him that remaineth of the city. What city? Well, it says right here in Ezekiel 4, verse 1, it says Jerusalem is that city. Because this is talking about the same prophecy. And lay siege against it and build a fort against it. What city? This Jerusalem that has rebelled. Okay, so who is this son of man that is to do this? Elijah David. And believe you me, he laid siege against the city. Okay, whenever he put forth Matthew 18 and started the revival and reformation, right there in that little bitty church, Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, he started that on January 27, 2001. When he initiated Matthew 18 on one member of the church, and caused an earthquake in the church, and caused the church to completely tumble down to the ground, not one stone was left upon another. 18 months later, Gilead Center was completely brought down and leveled to the ground. And lay siege against it, and build a fort against it, and cast a mount against it. What? Against this Jerusalem. This fallen city. Set the camp also against it. What camp? The camp David. And set battering rams against it round about. Moreover, take thou unto thee an iron pan, and set it for a wall of iron between thee and the city. And this here wall now, we're talking about when you rebuild Jerusalem, restore Jerusalem, you're talking about building a wall around it. They did when they came out of captivity, the 70-year captivity of Judah, when they came out in about 605 B.C., when they came out of captivity in about 535 B.C., they built a wall around Jerusalem. First thing they did. Okay. So this wall is very important in the time of trouble. In the time of trouble with your enemy, the wall is important around your city. Okay, it says, take thou unto thee an iron pan, and set it for a wall of iron between thee and the city, and set thy face against it, and it shall be besieged, and thou shalt lay siege against it, it shall be a sign unto the house of Israel. So when you see this Son of Man, take this and raise up this here iron pan, this wall of iron between thee, between the house of David, between this fallen city, Jerusalem, and set thy face against it, and it shall be besieged, and thou shalt lay siege against it. This shall be a sign to the house of Israel. Okay, now I want to make a point here. You know, we're talking about poor Balaam being a false prophet, you know. I'm going to take that back. I don't believe Balaam was a false prophet. I believe that he was a true prophet, or he couldn't have prophesied these wonderful prophecies. And why did he allow Balaam to try to curse Israel? Why did he allow why did the angel withdraw his sword and allow Balaam to go ahead? Yahweh said, okay, you're so persistent and wanting to go and get your reward money for cursing Israel. Says, I'm going to let you go. But here's the words that you're going to say. Here's the words you're going to speak to Israel. And you're not, and they're going to be words of blessing. And so you're going to prove to your enemy, Balak, and the enemy to Israel, the Moabites, that Yahweh's in charge, always in charge. And so Balak says, you know, I paid you to curse Israel, not to bless them. And Balaam says, I can only say the words that Yahweh gave me to say. Okay. But you know, it ended up though, the king of Moab, he ended up accomplishing what he set out to accomplish. Because Balaam wanted that money so bad, and yet he didn't earn it because he didn't curse Israel. But he did tell Balak a little secret. He said, I'll tell you what, Israel has a weak place. They've got 24,000 priests, or 23,000 priests here, that's in charge of those 12 tribes of Israel over there. And said, I'll tell you one thing, if there's some way that you could send women into their midst, you can entice them to fall into sin. And then you can defeat them. And Balak said, oh wow, I can accomplish my goal after all. So he gave Balaam his filthy lucre, his money. And then Balak said about preparing his harlot women to go into the camp of Israel. And what prophecy did that fulfill? That fulfilled the prophecy that Israel, when they rebuilt coming out of Egypt 38 years earlier, and remember their 40 years is not up yet. This is 2 years before their 40-year period is up in the wilderness. And Yahweh had made a prophecy that he had Moses to pronounce upon the children of Israel, that those that was 40 years, that 20 years and older, would not enter into the promised land. That was a verdict pronounced upon those rebellious house of Israel. Said, your carcasses are going to fall in the wilderness until the last one is fallen, except Joshua and Caleb are the only ones that are 20 years and older that are going to go into the land with those that are 20 years and younger at the end of the 40 years. There was 23,000, Okay, so now, here in number 25:9, it says, and when, okay, I want to read you here about the last man of the 24,000 priests that died, rounding out the 24,000 that died of the plague. It says, And Yahweh said unto Moses, take all the heads of the people and hang them up before the Yahweh against the sun, that the fierce anger of the Yahweh may be turned away from Israel. And Moses said unto the judges of Israel, slay ye every one his band that were joined unto Baal Peor. And behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation. And the children of Israel, who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand, and he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. So the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. And those that died in the plague were 24,000. So that was the last man of the 24,000 that had to die for fornicating with those harlot women of those Midianitish women from Moab. Okay. So, it was 24,000 that paid a severe penalty. Fulfilling the prophecy that Yahweh said, not one that is 20 years and older will enter into the promised land. So, let's praise Yahweh for his marvelous, marvelous works and how he uses people to fulfill prophecy, to make prophecies, and to carry them out. Now, true, Balaam, he died in the first battle with Israel. He had to pay a price. Whenever Israel fell into sin, then they had to go to fighting their enemies themselves. Up to then, Yahweh fought the battle strong. But up to then, the children of Israel were in the wilderness under Yahweh's protection for 40 years. As long as they abode in their tents and they followed the sanctuary system, even though those that was 20 years and older was not to enter into the promised land, nevertheless, as long as they obeyed in the wilderness all of Yahweh's laws, they were protected. And this is what worried Moab, the Balak, the king of Moab. He was looking right over the border and there at him, and he's saying, hey, these people, they're going to one day break loose and come over our border, and they're going to come and destroy us if we don't do something to get rid of them now ourselves. So Balak made every move in the world to get rid of the children of Israel, to get them destroyed. And he accomplished fulfilling the prophecy to clean out the last one that was 20 years and older. And so those 24,000 were purged out 2 years before the 40 years was up in their 38th year in the wilderness. So they had a revival and reformation then the next 2 years after they got rid of those 24,000 priests that had sinned 38 years earlier, coming out of Egypt, there at Kadesh Barnea, where they revolted. And so Yahweh had cleaned them out, and now he gave them a 2-year period. Well, actually, he cleaned out 24,000, the last of them. You know, that last 2 years, though, before they, he purged out a lot more people with the plague of the serpents biting them. And then Moses made a brazen serpent, put it on a pole, and Yahweh said, lift it up, and everyone that looks to this brazen serpent will be healed. So there was a lot of people killed there. Finally, purging out the last one, cleaning them up until he got them down to everybody 20 years and younger, except Joshua and Caleb. Okay, let's go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, and let's read that chapter. But before I do, I want to make a point here. I'm never going to call a person that has been called to fill a prophetic role, to fulfill a role in prophecy, a false prophet. I'm going to call them a true prophet, like Balaam was, that Yahweh kept his hand on him. And I'm going to call him a true prophet, even though they end up losing their way and making false prophecies. It's because that's the way they have been preordained to do. It's like King Saul. Yahweh was not King Saul was not Yahweh's first choice for king of Israel. He wasn't his choice at all. But the people wanted him, so Yahweh gave him to him. The people wanted a king, and Yahweh knew exactly who they would choose. No. Yahweh knew that they would choose somebody out of a powerful main tribe, like Judah or something. So Yahweh said, well, I'll choose their king for them, and I'll take it out of the least tribe that they have respect for, and that is the tribe of Benjamin. So Yahweh had his hand on what tribe the king came from, and then Yahweh put his approval on the king and had Samuel to anoint him and give King Saul every opportunity to do well. And so Yahweh is not at fault for allowing it. He put his blessing on it. It was like Yahshua didn't choose Judas Iscariot to be the 12th apostle. The 11 apostles accepted him because Judas Iscariot just kind of come along and just inserted himself among the 11. He wanted to be the 12th one. He wanted to be the 12th one, but he wasn't invited to be the 12th one. He just come in and inserted himself into the 12th position, and because he was so friendly and so able and had the talent and so forth, and he seemed so enthusiastic for the truth and for what the disciples were doing, that they accepted him. Yahshua accepted Judas Iscariot, even though Yahshua had nothing to do with choosing him to be the 12th. So he accepted King Saul, even though it was basically the people's choice. But nevertheless, he put his blessing upon them, if that's what they want to do, if they want to pretend or act like that they really want to be one of his servants, well, then he'll put his blessing on it, and he'll give you an opportunity to do that. He gave King Saul a 40-year period, and Yahweh couldn't back out of it. Even though he withdrew his blessing from King Saul early on, he still had to let him continue out his 40-year period. Just like Verlis Johnson, he pulled his blessing from Verlis Johnson early on, but he let him continue out and let the Gilead Center go for a 40-year period with two different leaders. Okay. Likewise, the Rod period. Yahweh laid his appointed servant in the grave early on, but he allowed Ben Roden, the successor, to finish out the Rod period, because Ben Roden had the right name and he had the right credentials to finish the Rod period out with, and so Yahweh chose Ben Roden for that. He chose Brother Johnson as Ben Roden's successor. Having said all that, now I'm going to get into 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, and I'm going to start with verse 1. Furthermore, then, we beseech you, brethren, and exhort you by the Yeshua Messiah, that as you have received of us how you ought to walk and to please Yahweh, so you would abound more and more. For you know what commandments we gave you by the Yeshua Messiah. For this is the will of Yahweh, even your sanctification, that you should abstain from fornication. Okay, so what happened? We read about those 24,000 priests that fell of the plague because they entered into fornication with the heathen women. Okay. Now, what would have happened if those 24,000 priests had remained pure and not fallen for that trap? You know what happened, don't you? They fell on the Day of Atonement. You know that, don't you? They were having an atonement when the last of the 24,000 were slain by Phinehas, the priest, priest. They were having atonement day. They were there for the blotting out of sins, and there was this here man, I think his name, I forget his name, but the woman's name was Cosby. I'm thinking his name was Omri, I don't know, maybe. And so anyway, what would have happened if they'd have remained true and not been enticed into fornication? Yahweh wouldn't have destroyed them. He would not have destroyed them. But he had made a prophecy that those that were 20 years and older, starting out, that had rebelled at Kadesh Barnea 38 years earlier, that they would not enter into the promised land at the end of 40-year period. So, Yahweh knows the heart. He knew that those men and their hearts were not 100%. That's why he allowed it. But what would have happened, though, if by any circumstance if they would have said, no, we're not going to do this? Yahweh couldn't have destroyed them. They didn't got their sins blotted out on the Day of Atonement. And Yahweh would have had maybe repented that he was of that prophecy he made. I don't know. I know Yahweh's repented before and changed his mind. He repented about Nineveh. He was going to destroy Nineveh, but whenever they did the right thing, he repented of that and reversed that decree. So who knows? Those 24,000, I know that Yahweh would have done the right thing. I do know that. If they had stayed true. So likewise today. So Paul is telling these Thessalonian Gentiles, for this is the will of Yahweh, even your sanctification. So what is the Day of Atonement for? Blotting out of sins and for your sanctification. That you should abstain from fornication. So there was this last priest that was taking this woman Cosby and was took her into his tent, and while they were having the Day of Atonement, he was in there fornicating with her, and so he was slain on that day. What would have happened if he'd have been in the other tent afflicting his soul and asking for forgiveness of sins and to get his sins blotted out? What would have happened? He would remain living with the rest of the congregation that day. And when the sun went down on that Day of Atonement, he would have had his name in the Lamb's Book of Life. And he would have been still living with them. But no, he ended up dead before the day was over. Okay? That every one of you should know how to possess his vessel in sanctification and honor. Not in the lust of concupiscence, even as the Gentiles which know not Yahweh. That no man go beyond and defraud his brother in any matter, because if Yahweh is the avenger of all such as we also have forewarned you and testified. For Yahweh hath not called us unto uncleanness, but unto holiness. He therefore that despises not man, but Elohim hath also given unto us his Holy Spirit. Okay, now you see right here? is telling those Thessalonians that Yahweh has also given unto us His Holy Spirit. But as touching brotherly love, ye need not that I write unto you, for ye yourselves are taught of Yahweh to love one another. And indeed, ye do it toward all the brethren which are in all Macedonia. But we beseech you, brethren, that you increase more and more, and that you study to be quiet and to do your own business, and to work with your own hands as we commanded you, that ye may walk honestly toward them that are without, and that ye may have lack of nothing. Okay, Paul's going to tell them about Yahshua's return here, starting on verse 13. But I would not have you be ignorant, brethren, concerning them which are asleep, that ye sorrow not, even as others which have no hope. For if we believe that Yahshua died and rose again, even so them also which sleep in the Yahshua will Elohim bring with him. For this we say unto you by the word of the Yahweh, that we which are alive remain unto the coming of the Yahshua, his son, shall not prevent them which are asleep. For the Yahshua himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of the Yahweh. And the dead in the Yahshua shall rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the cloud to meet the Yahshua in the air. And so shall we ever be with the Yahshua. Wherefore comfort one another with these words. That ends the prayer thought. Look at the page where we left off there in Brother Johnson's writings, all right enough. Let's see what we left off. And then we're going to divert to early writings, page 202, and we're going to read about the Jews decided to kill Paul. But right now we're going to look at page 22 of Brother W. Johnson's tract, Kingdom Jubilee, 1998. And it says in paragraph 8, not only Joshua, but also those who sit before him. And Brother Johnson's got the congregation. But where this is taken from, there in Zechariah 3, it doesn't say the congregation was represented by those four men, those men that sit before him. And not only Joshua, but also those who sit before him are admonished to hear this charge. And what kind of men are they? Men wondered at. Or you can go down to Kermit, where this prophecy was meeting its fulfillment, and those that were sitting before Brother Johnson, and he was claiming to be this Joshua. And he read this from the pulpit, and he said, well, he said, you see, this is what's going to happen when this is fulfilled. The men that sit before me are going to be men wondered at. Well, that never happened. So this is still a future prophecy. This symbolism shows that at the fulfillment of this prophecy, the angel of the church of the Laodicean, and so is no longer in charge of the Yahweh's house, and that Elohim's people are to be made up wholly of men wondered at. So, since Brother Johnson ended up fulfilling the prophecy of being this angel of the Laodiceans, of the church of the Laodiceans, then he could never be this here Joshua the son of Josedek, making up the house of Israel's leadership that was to be men considered as wondered at once they make their appearance. Not so. So Brother Johnson could never interpret this prophecy correctly, because Yahweh had him blinded to it, because he was playing the role of this angel of Laodicea that's going to be taken out of the leadership role. And it says and that the new leadership is going to be made up of men wondered at. So, okay, paragraph 9, obviously then as a result of this revival and reformation within the Laodicean church, another church emerges of which Joshua is in charge, and not the angel of Laodicea, Brother W. Johnson. So we're that another church that emerged because it is time for another movement. It's time for that fifth group of laborers, Matthew 20, verse 6, the last ones that are called at the 11th hour. And we were still in the 11th hour when this call was made for this fifth group of laborers to appear. They were to appear there at Laodicea. Now notice I said they were to appear there at Laodicea, the seventh church of the seven candlesticks, the last one in charge of the sanctuary service for Israel, and when I say for Israel, the spiritual Israel day for the Adventist church. Okay. In it there is to be neither tares, Matthew 13:30, bad fish, Matthew 13:47-48, or ghosts, Matthew 25:32. The latest sins, the seventh is the last that is co-mingled with hypocrites, saints, and sinners. Now, in paragraph 10, there in this here, we're reading from Time and Greeting, Volume 8, page 22-27, and Brother Johnson published it here, and we're on paragraph 10 now. Who is to bring this revival reformation, this great change? It's asking the question here. It says, hyphen, the branch. Well, does the Bible say that? No, the Bible don't say that. Ben Rhoden and Brother Johnson said that. But and maybe V.T. Hardup. But nevertheless, what does the Bible say is to bring this revival and reformation? It says this messenger of the covenant in Malachi 3, and Malachi 4, talking about as Elijah sent before the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh. He's the one that's is sent with this revival message. So, I'm going to read that again. Who is to bring this revival and reformation? This great change? Question mark. And then it says, hyphen, the branch. Well, that's... You don't start any sentence with an article, and especially you don't answer a question with a two-word sentence. And they answered the question here with a two-word sentence, the branch. Doesn't say anything. But if you were to answer it with a prepositional phrase and make it... explain itself, and it says, who is to bring this revival and reformation, this great change? All one has to do then is go to Malachi 3 and Malachi 4 and read it. Who is to bring this great change? And then publish it. If the people know their Bible, then they shouldn't have any trouble using it like a sword. That's what it says for. For his service, it says that it's a two-edged sword in our hands, his service. So in Malachi 3, it says, behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. Okay, who is this messenger? This is antitypical Elijah. And he's going to prepare the way before Yeshua. So when it says, behold, I send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. Who is this talking here? Yeshua. Yeshua is this person that's talking here. They should have this written in red. They only write Yeshua's words in red in the New Testament, but here it is in the Old Testament. This is Yeshua talking here. said, "Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me." So as Yahshua that came through the threshold of the house of Kermit, Texas, the Passover 2003, he's the one that sent his messenger before him, Elijah David. He was already there in the congregation at Gilead Center doing his work for the last 32 years when Yahshua came on the scene to put him in charge. And Yahshua, whom you seek, shall suddenly come to his temple, comma, even, that means conjunction, also, in other words, you could say, also the messenger of the covenant, Elijah David, whom you delight in. You delight in him once he appears, because you're going to be sitting there and you're going to be clustered together in a corner somewhere, clamoring, ready to perish, unless Yahweh send you a lifeline. This lifeline is antithetical Elijah, whom you delight in. Behold, he shall come with, I said, the Yahshua of hosts. Yahshua of hosts is the Messiah. So, behold, he shall come. And behold means to observe and see with your own eyes. Look upon him. He shall come. But who may abide the day of his coming? So he's asking this question when he came there at Kermit, Texas, and appeared in their midst, prophesying unto them in 2003. The question was then asked, who may abide the day of his coming? And who shall stand when he appears? For he's like a refiner's fire and like full of soap. Did you know I was there for 32 years? And I was there in their midst working for the congregation, bringing people in, both Jew and Gentile, Adventists and Gentiles. I was bringing them both in, getting them baptized, getting them acclimated as members of the congregation of Gilead. And I watched them come and go. I brought them in the front door, and Rhoda Johnson allowed his wife and her henchmen, her helpers, to usher them out the back door. So, as fast as they could get them ushered through out the back door, the better off they liked it. And every time we would start putting people in those pews from out there in the world, from out of the Adventist world and out of the Gentile world, we would enjoy our pews begin to fill up, and then over a little period of time, they would start disappearing again, becoming empty again. And who was doing their devilish work? Satan's imps. And number one, the ringleader of them was the prophet's wife. Okay, and he shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. And he shall purify the sons of Levi. Now this is your revival and reformation. Yahshua, by the power of the Holy Spirit, is effecting this revival reformation through his messenger of the covenant, Elijah David. And purge him as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Yahweh an offering in righteousness. And then in Malachi 4, verse 5, it says, behold, I hear that word behold again. It says, look and see with your own eyes. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great day of Yahweh. And he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children of their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. There's a revival and reformation. So who is to bring this revival and reformation? Just read it to you. This Elijah. Malachi 4, 5, and 6. And that's what this should have had printed here. Rhoda Johnson should have, if he had the true inspiration on this, if even if Vita Hutter said this to Brown, he would have said, well, you know, this is not right. The Bible says this antithetical Elijah that does it. But since Rhoda Johnson done preached that Elijah's already come and gone in the form of Vita Hutter and himself, That's already done past, so therefore he couldn't preach that now. So therefore he couldn't effectively then preach Malachi 4:5 anymore. The branch, and according to Isaiah 11:1-5, the branch is the Yeshua, and I put the preposition as, it's not in there, as the son of David. Okay, now see, as, and I also put as one of the sons of David. Okay, because I am a son of David. And there are many more that descended from David that sits in the prophetic seat has also, with that identity, as one of the sons of David. We shall now read Zechariah 3:9. Okay. It says, verse 9. For behold, the stone that I have laid before Joshua, upon one stone shall be seven eyes. Behold, I will engrave the graving thereof, saith the Yahshua of hosts, and I will remove the iniquity of that land in one day. Oh, look, what are we looking at here, folks? Brother Johnson, in his own handwriting, are showing you where this stone that is before Joshua, laid before Joshua, Zechariah 3:9, is the same stone that's hewn out of Mount Zion hands there in Daniel 2:44-45, which is antithetical David. As I told you before, that a stone represents a person, not a kingdom. It represents a person in charge of the kingdom, but it's not the kingdom itself. That's what one of the main things that caused Alan to leave here. He said, well, I happen to believe that stone is the kingdom, because the Bible says so, and so and so says so. And I said, yeah, but inspiration don't say so. And your opinion and your interpretation of the Bible doesn't read that way. He left anyway, saying, I'm right and you're wrong, okay? Alright, so it says, those who sit before Joshua are men one of that. No, let's back up. It says, for behold, the stone that I have laid before Joshua upon one stone shall be seven eyes. Behold, I will engrave the graving thereof, saith Yahshua of the host. Now Yahshua said, I'm the one that's going to engrave the graving thereon. Okay, he said, I'm the one that's going to write on it. Now, Yahweh the Father wrote upon the Ten Commandments with his finger. But, you know, they're in the desert of Sinai, in the wilderness of Sinai. But, you know what? I'm going to engrave my own engravings upon this stone, because this stone represents my servant, the branch, and Zechariah 3:8. So now, what is that Zechariah 3:9 identifying? Identifying that stone is exactly what I said. It represents a person. It represents that Joshua in Zechariah 3:8. I just right in front of Zechariah 3:9. I will engrave the graving thereof, saith Yahshua of hosts, and I will remove the iniquity of that land in one day. A day for a year? Okay, now I know why Yahshua kept me in Kermit from Passover 2002 to the second Passover 2003, exactly 13 months he kept me over. A day for a year, then from Passover to the first Passover 2003. So yeah, Yahshua kept me there for 13 months, and then he thrust me out of Kermit. Okay, so he says, why? Because the iniquity of that land had to be removed for both Israel and the Gentiles. Because the Gentiles are the ones that are ordained to take if they believe in the doctrines of the house of Israel and want to be a part of the house of Israel, then they have to take their Passover in the second month, not the first month. Okay, so that's how the second month makes up the 13 months that accounted for my having to stay there. I had to stay there for the Passover of the house of Israel, for the iniquity of the house of Israel, for 1 year. It took a whole year to remove the iniquity. And then for the house of the Gentiles, for the house of Israel, that is to include the Gentiles at the Passover the second month. Folks, the plot thickens and it gets deeper all the time. Alright, now I said, paragraph 12, those who sit before Joshua are men wondered at. As such, they are depicted by the stone, church or kingdom. Now, do you see this? Brother Johnson here, inspiration just got through showing him in Zechariah 3, 8, and 9 that this stone is a person, represents a person. And it represented Joshua, the son of Joseph, which Vicky Otto says translates into the antitypical David in our day, and antitypical Elijah, same thing. Elijah, David, two names, one person. Okay. Now, Brother Johnson, without inspiration, you see, he says, as such, they are depicted by the stone, and he may be quoting V.T. Hardiff here, and if he is, then the same thing goes with V.T. Hardiff. That's the reason why he ended up like he did, because he didn't have inspiration 100% on all of these things that he was laying down in prophecy and interpreting. Now, if he had just laid them down in prophecy and not tried to interpret every word, then it might have been a different story. He might have stayed on the scene a lot longer. I don't know. That is Joshua's, that is sort of Verla Sanchez saying now. He's saying, those who sit before Joshua are men wonder. As such, they are depicted by the stone, church or kingdom, that is in Joshua's sight. It has seven eyes, perfect vision. Okay. When this purification of the church takes place, then the sin in the land is removed quickly in one day. Now here Brother Johnson is saying is removed quickly in one day, or Vicky Hardiff is saying this. Either way, they didn't go ahead and put hyphen a day for a year, Ezekiel 4:6. They didn't go ahead and do that. So that would mean in 1 year's time it would be affected. See Malachi 13:41 and Joshua 7:10-26. Also, Malachi 4 points out that I want to end with Malachi 4. I'm running over, but I'm going to end with Malachi chapter 4, verse 1. For behold, and I said again, open your eyes and see with your own eyes, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud and all that do wickedly shall be stubble, and the day that cometh shall burn them up. Said to Yahshua of hosts, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. Now, why does it say root or branch? In other words, they don't have the foundation, and they don't have the end of that family tree, which is the branch. They don't have either one. But unto you, it's talking about unto you that fear my name. That fear my name, Yahweh, Elohim, Yahshua, my son, name. Shall the son of righteousness arise with healing in his wings, and he shall go forth and grow up as calves in a stall. And you know how long it takes calves to grow up in a stall? Exactly 1 year. A day for a year. So there's your prophecy in Malachi 4. It says that iniquity of that land is going to be removed in 1 year, for as long as it takes a calf to grow up in the stall, which is 1 year. This brings the close of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Now, folks, I never question Yahweh whenever he gives me something to present in the way of his messages. I never question when he gives me a title over and over again to to do these things. I just do it, and that's the reason why I'll be able to read from V.T. Hollis, or I'll be able to read from Verlis W. Johnson exclusively or something, because what I need to know, I don't know what's in there, but I do know once I get into it and inspiration opens up and guides me through my sermon today. This sermon was totally unplanned the way it went, but that's the way inspiration works. It teaches us the things that we need to know when we need to know them. So let us now end on that thought with a song. Because he lives, lost in the sky.
And life is worth the living, yes.